Over the last 50 years or so, tourism has been something of a gold rush. But according to Tricia Barnett from Tourism Concern, as the industry has grown, natural resources and local cultures have been plundered in order to give us paradise for a week.
Whilst those holidays are being established for us, local people rarely ever consult it. And it's only too often that the poorer the country, the less money actually goes down to the locals and stays within the country in order to benefit it. So, for example, you get a country like the Gambia that's had tourism since the 1960s, masses of package and charter tourism, but it's only very recently they've been able to establish tertiary education and have a university. People have always had to go away, so the money rarely comes back to the locals, and that's seriously important.
Now, why is it that that doesn't happen? You'd think you're going to there, you're spending your money, why aren't the local people getting it?
Local people aren't getting the money because resources from the government are put into infrastructure that's really useful for the hotel developers. And the hotel developers often get tax freebies from the government in order to encourage them to invest the last 5 or 10 years. And at the end of those 5 or 10 years, they usually sell on the hotel to the next person who has the same tax exemptions. Local people, if they want to borrow money to develop their own tourism, sometimes, you know, the rates are as high as 27% or higher, and they get no concessions and no help to build. But outside investors always. So that means that the industry in most of the world, or most of the poorer world in the south, is owned by outsiders. So naturally, they're taking the profits, they're taking the money. But as if that weren't enough, what is also happening is that when we go on holiday, we really like our own home comforts, in fact, better than home. And those aren't often grown, manufactured, or produced in the country that we're visiting. So much has to be imported. It's incredible that sometimes only as much as, say, 10% of what we pay for a holiday over the counter or on the internet actually stays in that country.
Now, it sounds like it's not just the tourism industry's problem, it's actually a governmental problem as well. So where have you actually got to tackle this to get the change to happen?
You're absolutely right. Governments are deeply embedded in this problem. And very often, if they're a poor government that's been encouraged to develop tourism as a cheap alternative to other productive industries by the IMF and by the World Bank because they're in debt, those governments don't have the freedom very often to argue against these conditions that are often established from the outside. In order to borrow the money they need, there'll be conditionalities attached which won't allow them to argue. And countries often also don't have the self-confidence to challenge a tourism industry, which at least allows them to earn a certain amount of dollars to repay their debts, than nothing at all.
So what sort of things do need to happen to actually make this change?
Well, the tsunami has been catastrophic, but what it has done is really injure and destroy livelihoods all along the coasts of the countries that were hit. And it's the fishermen and the tourism workers that are involved in that. Fishermen and tourism workers are constantly the most vulnerable people with any sort of man-made or natural phenomenon that happens that is very damaging. It's the tourism workers that are going to be laid off. We're going to want to have other sorts of holidays. So on the one hand, the tsunami is appalling. And on the other hand, if you can get beyond that, you see that it can raise an opportunity, a real challenge, in fact, for governments, for the tourism industry, for developers, for NGOs delivering the aid, to think, how can this be done in a better way? It's a toughie. And so at the moment, what we're doing is getting in touch with as many of those as we can to ask them what they think needs to happen when tourism is redeveloped and put back into place again. And we'd like to be able to use their voice to actually challenge governments, developers, international agencies to make things better now.
Is there already some areas of best practice that you can use? Or in fact, is everything different in every country because every country is so different?
It's very difficult to find extensive good practice in relation to the poorer people in each country benefiting from tourism, if they wish to have it in the first place. And sometimes they've got it willy-nilly, whether they've wanted it or not. There isn't a lot, as I say, of good practice. There's individual cases. There's some wonderful cases of good practice where local communities have managed to establish their own tourism enterprises, hotels or day visits. And we've got all those listed in our Good Alternative Travel Guide. But in a wider setting, the only really positive one, and it's scary to say only one, isn't it, when you think how big the world is, but the only one that I know about that incorporates marginalised locals, the tourism industry, the very biggest international players who work in that destination, and the government, is the Responsible Tourism Partnership, which is now happening in the Gambia. So this allows everybody to come together and see how those people who are always on the fringes, who always harass us, always do things not quite right, who don't know how to market the right sort of things to us, how those sort of people can be included into the product rather left on the outside, which is happening everywhere up until now.
That's Tricia Barnett.
Interviews from Passion for the Planet.
Copyright Passion for the Planet.
Online.
Hear health, environment, lifestyle, personal growth, and business experts when it suits you. This service is free. Register now at passionfortheplanet.com.
Find out more at passionfortheplanet.com.